Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Matt Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Matt Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Matt Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Matt.
It is now exactly 5 p.m. straight up on a beautiful, slightly overcast 96 degree day in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. Maybe the weather is finally broken for us, I don't know, but we were expecting some cooler temps a little earlier, but not quite. Spiked on us back to 105, 110 this past weekend. I got a great show on tap for you guys today. It's very exciting for me. I'm looking forward to it. Hope you are too. As usual, sitting in her normal seat, the fabulous Natasha.
Hello, everyone.
And, of course, the magic man himself, Zach Geist, behind the glass.
I am the magic man. Thank you, sir.
He is the magic man. My musical guest host. You can tell we've got more classical jazz on tap for you tonight. The great late trumpeter Art Farmer, who was actually raised in Phoenix, Arizona. As I recall, he was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa. I didn't know any black folks even lived in Council Bluffs, Iowa, but there you go. More stuff for me to learn. Back in 1928, grew up here in Phoenix. Started playing a trumpet at the age of 14. Moved to L.A., and played with some of the great musicians of his day. That's what we're listening to right now. I mean, he played with the Jerry Mulligan Quintet, you know. Here's an interesting note. He also played the flumpet. You ever heard of that, the flumpet? Which is a combination of the flugelhorn and a trumpet. Who knew? But anyway, he was touring Europe with Lionel Hampton back in the mid-50s. And he's one of jazz's finest musicians and had been for a long time. He passed away in 1999, but he left us a wonderful, wonderful library of great classical jazz. And I'm going to share some of it with you guys today. As I said, a great show on tap for you. Just a quick rundown. My early rant is going to be on nothing being neutral. My short segment, why people quit. And don't be confused, most people do. My main topic is going back to what we started on last week. Do you have a guilty personality? And hopefully we'll even get into what you can do to eliminate that from your life. But first, as we always do, we are going to jump into our shout-outs with Art Farmer in the background. Pam and Pele, our singing group from Holland. Yeah. Formerly of Ecuador, Andy in Spain. What up, my main man? Al down there in South FLA. Veronica G, more from her coming up in just a moment in the Philippines. Yes. Hula Girl, always one of my favorites, always will be. Peter and the Bevzilla, Rosie Brown, and Junior, I call him Ernest Spivey. And of course, Art Farmer, our musical guest host. Wow, perfect timing on that. Welcome, gang, to the Power Hour. My name's Mac Newton. I'm your host. As I said, we got an exciting a lineup. I'm very excited about our main topic today. Do you have a guilty personality? Do you? Maybe we can help you answer that question. And if you do, what can you do to get rid of it? But first, I want to share an email with you that I did get from our weather and political correspondent from the Philippines, Veronica Jarizaga. I hope I pronounced that correctly, Veronica. If I didn't, let me know. Veronica L., how am I? She starts off with, Veronica, I'm doing great. And she apologizes for being a little bit late with her weather forecast coming in from Manila. So, gang, I want to have weather forecasters and prognosticators from all around the globe. So if you're living in Spain, hey, Andy, send me a weather update and a political, just a little profile of what's going on in your country so we can share it with the rest of the world. We want the Power Hour to truly be an international force. So if you're out there somewhere, I know we've got listeners in South Africa, shoot me some info. Let me know what the weather is in Cape Town. Let me know what's going on in Johannesburg. And let me know what's going on out there politically or socially, all right? Okay, right now I guess the mean temperature at this time of the year is around 82 degrees. I know you'd like that, Zach, huh? I know you'd like that. Partly cloudy over last week, but she's going to update us some more. So there you have it. The weather in Manila is like perfect, okay, in the Philippines. And Veronica did say that she's... I mentioned Manny Pacquiao. I forgot I asked her about Manny Pacquiao. Was he one of her heroes? And she said yes, that I guess he was an inspiration to her when she started driving. I don't know exactly what she meant, but I guess maybe he gave her driving lessons or something. Showed her how to parallel park. You never know. But anyway, he's going to be fighting pretty soon against another fighter. He's very, very disciplined, and I guess he's very involved in the country's politics. So, Veronica, thanks for your update, and keep it coming. Let us know what's happening out there in the Philippines. Thank you so very, very much. Okay, my early rant today is about nothing being neutral. And it's really amazing because Zach came in, and I'm not sure if I steered him toward it or not, but he was asking me about that exactly. And don't be confused, gang. Everything counts. Nothing's neutral. Even the snack that you ate standing up in front of the refrigerator door, the refrigerator with the door open, that counts too. Because, sometimes people think, if I ate that snack with the refrigerator door open, it didn't count. Okay? If I ate it with my finger, off of my finger, it didn't count. Yes, it does. Everything counts. Nothing's neutral. Everything you eat counts. Everything that you drink counts. Everything that you think counts. There are no neutral thoughts. I like to believe and think that all my thoughts are either propelling me forward or moving me backwards. So if I've got something on my mind, I always think, is this line of thought propelling me forward or moving me back? It's one or the other, because nothing neutral. Is this food I'm eating making me stronger or making me weaker? Nothing's neutral. It's one or the other. Ask yourself the question, and it'll help keep you on the beam. The people you're hanging out with, they're either making you better or they're making you worse. Nothing's neutral. So don't be fooled. All of your thoughts count. Either they move you forward or they move you backwards. Nothing's neutral. You know what? It's actually against the law of nature for us to stand still. If you're not moving forward, the universe will force you backwards. It's a law of nature. You know why? There is no neutral. So don't get in the habit of thinking this doesn't count, or this dessert doesn't count, or hanging out with these people, it doesn't really count. I'll be able to overcome that. Well, you might like to think so, but that might explain why you've not been moving forward, why with all the work you've been doing, even the planning and goal setting, you're still in the same place you were 2 years ago? Why? Because you think that some things don't count. Nothing neutral. This week, we're going to skip our 3-2 information that we normally have. We're going to pick up on it next week so that we can move quickly into my short segment because it's a little bit longer. And I don't want to do what I did last week. You know, I got a couple emails about that because, you know, we had to cut our main topic segment short. And you know what? I heard you. We're not going to do it. It is now 12 minutes past the hour, gang. My name is Mac Newton. This is the Power Hour. Fabulous Natasha is sitting in. Tell us something new going on in your life, my dear. What's happening with you? What's going on?
New year?
New
for
year?
Me? Well, I just got 1 year older. So
that's right. She had a birthday last week.
It is a new year for me.
Well, you know, Zach, she doesn't have a birthday. She has a birth week.
All right.
Yeah, she has a birth week. Let's celebrate
that's
that.
True.
Stretch it out a long time.
Well, maybe I even can extend it to a month, I guess. That feels so good. Yeah, feels right.
Yeah, we get a chance to go out and party and have some fun and drink champagne. Zach, do you celebrate just the birthday or the birth week?
Well, mine's on December 22nd, so you know it's right there, backed up to Christmas. But it's gone well. You know, it's just an extra special time of the year.
Would you? Having your birthday kind of in the Christmas holiday season, have you ever wished it was at a different time of the year?
I get that question a lot, but like I said, I mean, it just makes that part of the year, you know, that much better,
more special. Okay. All right. You know, my brother Kenny was born the day after Christmas. Yeah, and so he always was complaining.
Now, it might be different there since the day after.
He was always complaining about it. He says, my birthday is the day after Christmas. I miss out on some neat gifts, you know. Everyone's tired, and I'm sort of an afterthought, you know. So, but not you. That doesn't happen with you.
It's, you know, everything just ramps up right there as we're approaching the 25th.
Okay. I want to remind everybody, we're about halfway through now on the filming of my workouts, which will be online. Speaking of Christmas, certainly before Christmas. Well, so Veronica and all, and Andy and Al, all you guys around the country and around the world listening to the Power Hour, you want to work out with me? All of you guys in New York, the names don't jump into my mind right now. Gee whiz, but you'll be all of the followers of a Blair, a singer, with sales partners, no matter where you are around the country, all of you major players in sales, will be able to log on to my website and work out, choose the workout. You won't just be stuck with only the mini Mac. You'll be able to work out with me in the gym and feel all that excitement. And we're about halfway through so far. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So just a little over, almost a little over a third of the way there. So we're going to end up with about 12 different workouts, 12 different levels from rank beginner. I mean, someone who is, you know, maybe 80 years old or 250 pounds or even 300 pounds, to start them off and work all the way up in case where I was, you're planning on walking on for your college football team or you want to try out for the Olympics. In other words, the highest level of training available right there from beginning to end. I'm excited about it. So we're about a third of the way there. So stay tuned for that. You'll be able to just log on and choose the one that's best for you. All right. Did anyone try any of our new recipes? Did you try any this week? You know, our curried shrimp. Did you try that one? The curried, what was it? The curry, what did we have? The curry. We had to see. I hate being appearing disorganized. I hate that. I knew you guys would just.
Well, we had the chorizo, you know, before that, and then I know that we did offer, you know, have a few different choices last week.
Natasha,
I certainly haven't been able to cook them up yet.
The curry. It was the curry.
I have no idea. You know, I don't cook, so I can't remember.
But you eat plenty.
Kind of,
you eat plenty.
I do eat. I love to eat plenty.
So we cooked the curry dish. What was the curry dish? What was that? See there? You expect me to remember it all? Yeah, okay.
We had a shrimp offering.
Okay, I guess I caught him off guard again. All right, again, let's move on. Here's my short segment for today. Why people quit. And don't be confused. Most people do. And I've talked often about this subject because I feel very strongly about it. I mean, it's basically what I did all of my teenage years and early adult life. You know, I quit when it was early in the game, and I quit late in the game. So anyway, the lasting negative effects that quitting has on the lives of those who quit is huge. Like I said earlier, it's silly to quit early in the game when you have all of your potential in front of you. And it's even sillier to quit late in the game. I mean, I've seen people quit when they're within sight of the finish line, when they have their goal in sight. They'll quit. I don't get that. When children learn to quit early in their lives, when they learn to quit early on, it becomes sort of like a behavioral response to any difficult situation that they encounter later on. Becoming an habitual quitter is like setting fire to your potential. And the sad fact is, most people are quitters. So what can one do to eliminate or minimize the tendency that we have to quit? Have you ever wondered why some people hang on against all odds until they turn defeat into victory? Never wondered about that? Especially while others quit, sometimes in plain sight of the finish line. Is it courage? Is it intestinal fortitude? I mean, is it just guts, the guts to endure, like boxers getting off the canvas? You know, to stick to something until it's finished? Is it simply in your genes? No, none of the above. Then what is the difference between the person who quits and the person who perseveres? Well, I can tell you. It's optimism and goal setting. Those two things. Think back over your life, and you will certainly agree that whenever you let negative thinking permeate your mind, and if you lost the ability to see good things in your future, you wanted to give up. Isn't that true? Of course it is. Whenever you hang around negative people and they poison your mind with negative thoughts, you can't do it. When you lose the ability to visualize and see all the great things in the future, you want to give up. Negative thinking and backward thinking causes you to lose your desire to keep working on whatever it was you wanted. And then you just wanted to shut it down. And here's the thing that gets so many people. Maybe they didn't call it quitting at the time, but that's what it was. Maybe because the circumstances, you know, they just seem to justify their decision to give up. Justify your decision to give up. Maybe it says, well, Mac, you weren't there. You didn't know how compelling that situation was. You know, I was justified in stopping, but I didn't quit. That's what it was. Maybe just because you seemed justified, you didn't consider it actually quitting, but yeah, it was. Maybe it was just a small thing. But understand this. The better you get at quitting on small things, soon you'll be quitting on big things like your career or your marriage. And the results on quitting on those matters can have a disastrous impact on your life. And speaking about quitting on little things, it's not just the impact of quitting on even the big things that seem so obvious, like your career or your marriage or your children. But sometimes it's the accumulated weight of all the small things you quit on, all the little commitments, all the little goals you set. Saving money, putting money aside, changing behaviors, all these things, learning a new language, learning a musical instrument, all these little things that you quit on, building up, just wear down your self-esteem and make you see yourself as a quitter, as a loser, as someone not really deserving of the good things. And you can easily change all that around in a heartbeat. You can change it all by finishing everything you start. As I said, quitting can have a disastrous impact. So No matter what, here's what you do. Find ways to keep the fires, the flames of optimism burning brightly in your mind or burning brightly in your soul, so to speak, okay? Develop the habit of setting meaningful goals. They don't have to be big. In fact, when you first start out, make sure they're small but meaningful ones. Ask yourself this question: what one thing can I change in my life right now, one small thing that will have the biggest impact? What will it be? Will it be being on time everywhere you go? Will it be developing a better memory, perhaps? Would it be becoming a better listener? Something small that'll have a tremendous impact. That's what I mean by meaningful goals. But you want to set them in a balanced fashion. Things in your life and family, in your career, and in your own personal self-improvement. And when you do those two things, that will keep your mental focus future directed instead of past oriented. Okay, that's my short segment for today. Hopefully, if you can keep some of these things in mind and, you know, talk to people about them. Don't take my word for it, you know? Ask people you admire what they think of these thoughts, you know? In fact, do me a favor. Call someone you know if you like listening to the Power Hour and tell someone about it. You'll make their day sooner or later. Hey, gang, it is now 22 minutes past the hour, and you are listening to the Power Hour every single Wednesday at this time. It's 96 degrees down here, a little overcast. Do you think it's going to rain, Zach? No? You think so?
I heard we got some rain coming.
Really?
Okay. I did just wash my car, like I said, so.
Well, yeah. That's it.
That's
always an indicator. But you know what, though? Zach, here's something to make you feel better about that. It's always a good thing to wash your, to have it rain on a clean car.
I recall you said that.
Remember that?
Absolutely.
It's always better. You know why? Because if your car's all dirty and it rains on it, it pits and it dulls your finish. And you've got that beautiful little, what do you call it, color? It's like burnt orange or something? What is that?
That's like a special edition lava orange, I believe.
Lava orange. That's like the things that the lava in Hawaii, the lava orange. And what kind of car is that, by the way?
So those little Scion XPs, Xbox.
It's perfectly square. Natasha, didn't you say you like a square car?
Well, sort of a square cars, yes. I like more like Jeep kind square cars.
A Jeep square car?
Yes.
Okay, but that's, yours is really square. It's like square.
Literally.
It's the first generation, yeah. It's a little toaster, a little bread box.
It's a little shoebox running, right? A little toaster running down the street.
It was originally called the BB in Japan.
The BB? Oh, is that where the design came from? Came from Japan?
It's like a Toyota, basically. It's just, you know, Scion is like an offshoot of Toyota, so.
And they have one like it? Toyota has one like that, too?
I actually had heard from my friend that there's like gangs of kids that drive around in those, you know, like 10 or 12 of them all on the freeway, just packed full.
They all driving
in
down the
Japan,
street?
In Japan, yeah.
In Japan, just rolling down little square little toaster boxes.
Those little toaster boxes.
How's the handling in that car?
It's like a little go-kart, honestly. You know, it gets me around.
I was noticing the wheels the other day when you pulled up there. They're very small.
Yeah, it's not quite a, you know, M3 or M5, but I'm saving, you know, like you taught me.
Okay, it's kind of a cute car, though, really. It's got that orange.
That's why
it's
I loved it, you know.
It's got flavor. It's got flavor, you know. It's got flavor. And you know, you gotta understand something about Zach. Zach is cool. I mean, he's got the beard coming back. What's up? Got the beard coming back? You know, you got that coming working for him. And
I try to keep it, you know, 18th century.
Do you?
Movie Gangs,
yes,
of New York.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking Three Musketeers.
That works.
I'm thinking Three Musketeers.
Just like to harken back to
absolutely
the, you know, older time.
Absolutely. No doubt about that. All right, gang, coming up on my main topic is guilty personality, and it's now 25 minutes past the hour. I'm going to use the next 4 minutes, Natasha, to kind of get a quick review over what we had started last week, so that at the bottom of the hour, we'll be able to come in and start up with this week's segment right off. Now, the question I asked last week was, do you have a guilty personality? And I wanted you to answer that question straight away before I gave you the adult indicators of a guilty personality. Okay, so here they are. If you were raised under the influences that create feelings of guilt, if you were raised that way, you're gonna experience guilt in several different ways. Zach, did I define, or at least say what I thought my definition of guilt was last week? Do you remember that at all? If I didn't, let me go ahead and do it anyway. Because, see, people have different interpretations of the word guilt. I was talking with a very, very informed lady a couple weeks ago, and she said that she sort of interpreted it as shame. You know, shameful. I don't like the word shame, but I understand how she was using it. I define guilt as a feeling that you are worth less, that you feel that you're not as valuable as others. It's a feeling of worthlessness. There you have it. That's my definition of guilt. So when I say a guilty personality, that's what I'm referring to. Do you feel at times that you are not as valuable fundamentally, that you're worth less than others? Let's take this a little bit further. The first and most common indicator of guilt are feelings of inferiority, inadequacy, and undeservingness. You feel that you don't deserve good things to happen to you. You ever feel that way? You ever feel that after things have gone really well for a while, that you start to get nervous and you start getting a little uneasy? I call it success anxiety. It's caused by having a guilty personality, that your undeservingness of having good things happen ongoing, continuing. Sometimes you hear people say, well, bad things happen in threes. That's true. Bad things happen in threes, sixes, nines, twelves, fifteens, any number you want. But so do good things. But why don't we think about the good things that happen? It's only our deep-rooted feelings of undeservingness and inferiority that create this feeling of undeservingness and make us feel that if good things are happening, if too many good things happen in a row, it's like we've got to do something to balance the slate. We have to balance the ship. Things are out of kilter. Too much good stuff happening. People with guilty personalities sometimes can't deal with too much good stuff. So when I know I'm talking to someone with a guilty personality, I'll say, you know what I want you to do? I want you to just tolerate this for a while. Just put up with this success for a while. Just don't destroy it right away. Just put up with it for a little bit. That's the first, those are the most common indicators that you have a guilty personality. As I said, in fact, if several good things happen to you in a row, you'll become extremely uncomfortable. You'll feel out of your comfort zone, and you'll probably start doing things, self-sabotaging behavior, and you're going to do those to stop the good things from happening. The truth is that you deserve all the good things that can come to you. I mean, especially if you keep your mind focused on what you want and you're setting goals and you keep it off of what you don't want. So you're deserving of all the good things. It's those feelings of inferiority, inadequacy, and undeservingness that are keeping you away from it. Now, those feelings are expressed in these words. I can't. I have to. I didn't mean it. I'm sorry. It wasn't my fault. Basically coming down to these words. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. Some people call it the fear of failure. I call it the fear of success. The fear of success. And it's simply another way of saying that because of your deep down feelings that you're not worth very much, any achievement that contradicts your own self-imposed, self-limiting beliefs make you feel uncomfortable. And sometimes people will work extremely hard for the success that they deserve. They'll put in long hours and make great sacrifices. However, just as they're almost reaching their goal, right at the precipice, something will go wrong. They will make the fatal mistake, and they will, now see, it's the people think, well, it was an accident. You know what I think it is? I think that this is almost, it's, see, your subconscious mind has accepted these feelings of unworthiness and these things that you've been saying about yourself so long. I'm not good enough. These thoughts that I'm sorry. That you've been saying all these statements for so long that your subconscious mind has accepted them as commands, instructions. And now, as you're about to achieve success, it feeds behavior back to you that forces you to kick that chair out from underneath you just as you're about to grasp the brass wing of success. And you find yourself failing again, just like the salesman on his way to close the deal of a lifetime. And what does he do? He gets into a car accident. How about the lawyer on his way to the signing of a big contract, and he gets out of the cab, and the cab drives away, and his briefcase is inside with the only contract. Accident? Not the way I see it. Hey gang, it's exactly 30 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Power Hour. My name's Mac Newton. The fabulous Natasha is in the co-host chair, and of course the magic man, Zach Geist, behind the glass, making the whole thing happen. You stay right where you are. We'll be right back. Hi gang, I'm Mac Newton, and as much as you enjoy listening to the Power Hour and the feeling you get being shown the way, a way to get the most out of yourself, sometimes it boils down to just you and where you are. But no matter where you are, you're always going to have something that can go with you. www.macnewton.com. No matter where you are or where you may be, you'll be able to log on and work out with me, Mac Daddy. I mean, exactly the same workout that Aeneas Williams did, the same workout that Bo Jackson did, the same workout that Jay Novacek did, the same workout that Ricky Henderson did, the same workout that Dan O'Brien, the Olympian gold medalist, did. Yes, you, wherever you may be. www.macnewton.com, the home for champions, the home for winners, where you can read about success every day, no matter where you are, where you can work out and feel that you are on your path to accomplishing your goal. And let's say you don't want to be an Olympian, you're not interested in playing football. Well, what do you think a chief executive officer is but a top performing athlete? And you too need to be in the best shape of your life. There you have it. No matter who you are or where you are, www.macnewton.com is for you. Tune in today. I'm Mac Newton. Hey gang, welcome back to the Power Hour. My name is Mac Newton. Zach Geis, the engineer behind the glass, the magic man we call him, and of course the fabulous Natasha sitting in her customary co-hosting chair. Our musical guest host is the late trumpeter Art Farmer. Art Farmer is not as well known as some of the other great trumpeters of his day, certainly not like Miles Davis or predecessors Louis Armstrong, but make no mistake about it, he was a giant in the industry. He played with Horace Silver, Jerry Mulligan, and traveled the world. Was better known in Europe. Was spent a lot of time traveling and touring through Asia, and recorded numbers of albums, and played traditional contemporary jazz for the majority of his life. I hope you like it, and maybe you'll go out and see if you can add Art Farmer to your collection. I know you'll enjoy it. I always do. Nothing better than putting on a little Art Farmer, maybe a little vintage champagne, light a couple candles, and hopefully have someone near and dear to you. Yeah? Kind of nice, how's that? Okay. Okay, gang, welcome back to the Power Hour. Yes, Art Farmer, one of my favorites. I have several of his CDs, and always a soothing. In fact, at the top of the show, Natasha said, is all of his music so melancholy? I said, it's not melancholy, it's just soothing. It's just soothing, very soothing. He plays a very smooth saxophone. During the break, we were sitting here chatting, and Zach said to me, he says, now everyone knows I have a cute car. I don't have a tough one. I said, Zach, you know, it takes a tough guy to drive a cute car. Okay, all these guys riding up on the top of these old monster trucks, you know, and they're black and got big Doberman pinchers and pit bulls sitting up there with them. They're scared to death. That's why they want their cars to speak for them. I'm big and bad. Don't mess with me. Okay, I got my Doberman pinchers and pit bulls. You know, well, do you really need that to go through life? You need a Doberman pincher or a pit bull? Is that the signal you want to say? What are we talking about here? Insecurity? Ooh, in droves. Feelings of inadequacy? You betcha. All right? That's what that says. Can't take care of myself. I'm insecure. I need a pit bull. Okay? Don't worry about it. You're secure.
Guess it's fitting that we have two chihuahuas at the house there.
There you go. Okay, I'm going to move right on. Okay, and also during the break, too, Natasha was saying that, because I asked the question at the top of the show, you know, do you have a guilty personality? And I wanted you to answer the question and then listen to that. And then I'm going to ask that question again at certain points throughout this week and next week and the following week. And Natasha said something about that. She said that at first she said no, that she didn't have a guilty personality, but... Natasha?
Yes, but as further as we go, last week and this week, and I'm thinking about when I feel guilty and how I feel guilty and about little things, and I'm thinking the question shouldn't be, do you have a guilty personality? It should be, to what degree do we have a guilty personality? Because it's in all of us. We're all human beings. And we've all been in situations when parents used guilt to punish or manipulate children. Well, I can say all probably, but most. Most people go through this stuff through life. And yes, sometimes even I feel, even though I think I don't have guilty personality, but sometimes I do feel guilty.
Yes.
So I do have guilty personality. But not as much as some people, you know. I believe in success, and I believe in my future, and always fight for it.
I think that we'll find that just because a person has a guilty personality doesn't mean that they're not going to make some strides toward being successful, and we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
But your point is well taken, and it's absolutely true. You know, there's varying degrees. There's a broad spectrum here, and I'm going through this to find out exactly where you may be. to what degree that you've accepted this type of, and what you can do about it. We're certainly going to get to that, some of that, before the end of the show today. Okay, so good point. Thanks for bringing that up. Now, I finished up with the first adult indicator. The second adult indicator of guilt is destructive self-criticism, where the person is always destructively criticizing themselves, or they're demonstrating self-defeating behavior. Oh, I can never win. I'm never good enough. If a person is criticized while they're growing up by their parents or their teachers or their siblings, they soon learn how to criticize themselves. And they've learned how to criticize themselves directly from their parents or their teachers. And if it's continued through life, you often hear people say things like, I'm always late. I'm terrible with numbers. I have a bad memory, or I'm not very good at this, or they're constantly reinforcing negative ideas that may have little or no basis in fact at all. There are people who go through life saying negative things about themselves that are completely false. They're simply repeating what they've been told about themselves. And in doing so, eventually they make it their real world. They make it their reality. As I said earlier, your subconscious mind accepts whatever you say about yourself as true. And when you constantly criticize yourself, your subconscious mind accepts these words as commands. Your subsequent, all of your words subsequently, and your actions will then fit a pattern that will be absolutely consistent with this self-criticism. You will behave on the outside exactly the way that you talk to yourself on the inside. Now, the third indicator, the third way that you show that you've been raised or dealt with guilt, is that you're easily sometimes manipulated by guilt. You are an easy mark for the irritation or the impatience that others use to manipulate your behavior. Even people you don't know can pull your guilt strings and make you feel uncomfortable or even give in to their demands. In other words, you feel like a puppet, and the guilt thrower becomes the puppeteer. Usually when you see with parents and teachers and some negative religions, they use guilt very effectively. It works almost all the time. And there are some people who their only way of communicating is by using guilt. Their purpose is to control the person's emotion. And sometimes their purpose is just to make the person feel bad. Especially with parents to children, they use it to make the children feel small, feel insignificant. And so the children can grow up spending their whole lives feeling insignificant, when in fact they aren't. Okay. You know, I think that sometimes taxi drivers, waitresses, flight attendants use guilt on you to control your behavior. I mean, I know, for example, that you lose between a pint and a quart of water for every hour you're in an airplane when you're flying cross country. So as a result, when I'm in an airplane, I constantly am drinking water, constantly. And I'm asking the flight attendant, I'm constantly asking for more water, and they absolutely resent this. And I mean, they know all about dehydration because it's part of their job. They know all about it, and they're trained to drink a lot of fluid when they're in the water. I mean, when they're in the air, but they don't want the extra work of refilling your water glass or bringing you a bottle of water every 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, whatever it is, or every hour. So instead of asking, can I get you anything else? They'll say, will that be all? In some sort of condescending, guilt-laden way. And so the three ways that people usually respond to guilt is to do one of three things. They either try to explain themselves, they get defensive, or they apologize. So you say, well, I'm sorry for having you do this. You see, I have a cold. Huh. You know what? When they ask me, will that be all? I usually say, no, there won't be. I'm going to need another one of these in another 20 minutes. I'm not buying the guilt game. If you ask for more water, they're going to go, give you a deep sigh, as if you just asked them to carry a 300-pound suitcase across the tarmac. And then when they bring it back, they tend to be abrupt and then disapproving. This is to sort of get you into a submission mode so that they can go back to the galley and read their magazines and not be bothered by you. You need to be more aware of how commonly guilt is used as a tool to influence people. I mean, you can see it everywhere. Okay. The fourth indicator of guilt is using guilt and blame yourself on others. I mean, if you were raised a victim of guilt, being constantly criticized and constantly blamed, you're going to grow up and you're going to use guilt as a way of communicating with other people. As I said earlier, parents use guilt exclusively to get their children to do what they want to do, to get them to do what they want to do and to make them feel insignificant. Bosses rely on guilt as a primary method of control. They make them feel guilty continuously. As I'm saying this, you're out there, you're listening, you can probably think of something that may be happening to you right now or earlier today, and certainly not then, it's going to happen a little bit later. Okay? Now, the fifth manifestation of guilt, and perhaps the most common, this is the most common indicator is the development where the person finally becomes the victim, develops the victim complex. The individual feels like a victim, talks like a victim, walks like a victim, acts like a victim, and where I come from, that's a victim. You know, kind of like the old duck. If it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, if it looks like a duck, where I come from, that's a duck. This person is always making excuses or apologizing. They're always saying, in effect, I'm not guilty. They say, I'm sorry. In addition, they say, I didn't mean it. I can't. I have to. I have to, but I can't. I can't, but I have to. I'll try. I'll try. These are the favorite words of people who have guilty personalities. They're always saying, I'm not guilty, using this victim language because they've developed the victim complex. Am I making sense? I'm making sense? Okay. What they'll say is, I'm trying. They're apologizing in advance for not doing it. They won't say, I'll do it. They'll say, I'll try. So they're explaining their failure in advance. They're telegraphing their belief that they are going to fail in whatever it is that they're telling you they're going to try to do. And you, intuitively, you know that these words are signals that what's upcoming is failure. You know that beyond a shadow of a doubt. Wow. I mean, you know, I'm interviewing doctors right now because I've got a little surgical procedure I have to do here soon. I'm interviewing doctors. If I go to that doctor and I say, hey, doctor, listen, you know, I got this surgery coming up. You know, you're going to do a good job on that and get me ready to go back on the Taekwondo floor and, you know, fly and do a great job. He says, I'll try. What? Say what? Huh? I don't think so. You hang in here for a second. I gotta go out. Bye. I'm going to find me another doctor. Okay? Right? And you're too. Okay? You're gonna find you a lawyer. Hey, you think you're gonna get me off? You know, if you don't get me off, then someone's gonna spend the rest of my life in jail. You gonna get me off? I'll try. What? right. He's telling you already he's going to fail. So when you come back later and you say, hey, you didn't get me off. I didn't say I'd get you off. I said, I try.
I'll give it my best shot.
I'll give it my best shot. It's exactly the same thing. That's victim language. I'll give it my best shot. I'll give it my best shot. Oh, my goodness. Well, if that's all you got to give me, don't bother. It's 50 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Power Hour every Wednesday here on MacNewton.com at 5. If that's all you got to give me, don't bother. These words, I'll try, mean I'm going to fail at this. And I'm just letting you know right now, clearly, so that you don't try to criticize me in the future. All right. Like I say, victim language. I can't. I have to. I have to. But I can't. Other victim language is contained in the words. I wish. I wish. I wish I could finish my education. I wish I could be more like you, but I know I can't. I wish. I wish I could quit smoking. I wish I could lose this weight. I wish. Oh. But I know I can't. That's how you finish it. I wish I could finish my education, but I know I can't. I wish I could lose some weight and get healthy, but I know I can't. Victim language. Why you use victim language? Because you suffer from the victim's complex. I asked you again. Do you have a guilty personality? What kind of language are we going to get now? Make the decision right now to eliminate victim language from your conversation as our first step. Make the decision right now to eliminate victim language. Speak with definiteness. Is that a word? Definite? Be definite. Be definite. Don't say, I wish. Say, I will. I want. Don't say, I'll try. Say, I will. Don't say, I have to. Say, I will. I will or I won't. I want to. Say, I can. Rather than, I can't. Or, I wish. Rather than say, you'll try, say you will or you won't. Don't be wishy-washy. Say you will do it or you won't do it. As a teacher, I hate it when people only try to work out. Because I have no idea where they really are. I don't even know how to teach them. When they're giving me a sincere effort and they fail, at least I know where they are. Because they're doing it. Doing it doesn't always mean you're going to succeed. It means you're going to give it a sincere effort. So either do it or don't. Either do it and run the risk of exposing yourself. But that's hard for someone with a guilty personality. Why? Because they feel undeservingness of good things. They feel inadequate. They feel inferior. And they feel if they're going to do anything, they have to be perfect because they can't stand failure. Am I making sense to you now? All right. We've got just enough time for me to give you one or two ways to free yourself from guilt. And for you parents out there who are listening, you are learning very good stuff of how to treat your kids. You are learning ways in which you can raise super kids, where you can raise kids where they can be free of guilt and start a whole new generation of guilt-free individuals. Because you know what? You know you got two kinds of people. You got guilt throwers, you know, and you got guilt catchers. So, you know, the guilt throwers, you know, people who are always trying to make people feel guilty, and the guilt catchers who are real good at being made to feel guilty by the forces of magnetism. They grow up and they're attracted to one another and they get married, you know, your guilt throwers and your guilt catchers, and they have a bunch of kids and they give birth to a bunch of guilt throwers and guilt catchers, and the guilt is just perpetuated on down through the generations. And we got more guilt catchers and guilt throwers than you can shake a stick at. I've got some very, very effective guilty personalities out there on my training floor. They're 6 years old. 6 years old. 6 years old. They're not as old as that uniform over there. And they are very highly skilled, guilty personalities. How long do you think it's going to take them to undo that? The word would be never. So how do you get rid of these feelings of guilt that get in the way of your happiness? What do you do? There are basically five things. We're not going to get to all of them today, but that's okay. give you more reason to come back next week. We're going to start off with the first. First, eliminate destructive self-criticism from your conversations. Never use destructive criticism on yourself at all. Eliminate it from your thoughts. Don't even think destructively in your mind. Eliminate it. Eliminate destructive self-criticism. Eliminate destructive self-talk from your conversation. And at the same time that you refuse to say anything that is destructively self-critical, refuse to say anything that is self-deprecating, and refuse to allow anyone else to speak to you in a negative way. Refuse to allow people to criticize you negatively. Now, here's the way you do it. Now, in order for this to be effective, you're going to have to be in the progression of change. Because here's the way I do it. Here's the way I do it. I always say, when someone says to me, if they bring up a past negative behavior for me, and see, I'm an easy target. I'm an easy target, Zach, because, I mean, I've had so many behavioral issues as growing up, and then I've become this person in life who's out there doing stuff, competing and doing stuff and teaching and getting involved in situations, and yet my behavior was always a little suspect in terms of the things I did and the way I treated people. And so as a result, I was criticized a lot. And so a lot of that crept into me, you see. And so it was self-perpetuating to my guilty personality. So as I studied to get rid of this, now did I have to stop destructively criticizing myself for anything. I had to stop allowing anyone else to say it. Because they'll say, you know what, you're always late. I said, whoa. Don't you ever say that about me again. You have to stop them in their track and say, don't ever say that about me again. And they'll say, well, why not? You are always late. You've been late ever since I've known you. And you can respond with, well, that's true. I have been late in the past, but I don't do that anymore. I've made changes. I'm making changes on myself. I'm changing myself. Don't ever say that about me again. Nip that one in the bud. And see, you can't afford to not challenge any negative criticism. Any negative criticism that goes unresponded to, unchallenged, will be accepted again as if you were talking to yourself. It will become a command. It will become part of your self-concept. And as I've said before, you can never outperform your self-concept. It will become part of who you are. I would appreciate it if you would not speak to me that way again. Don't ever say that about me again. Because your subconscious mind, as I said, is always absorbing information and internalizing it as part of your self-concept. And if you allow someone to say something that is negative to you without you challenging it, it's going to accept it as a valid description of who you are. And it's going to file it away to reinforce your feelings of guilt and your feelings of inferiority. Negative statements by yourself or from others, if not canceled out or challenged, will set you up for failure in the future. King, it has been an absolute gas, as my man, Don Cornelius used to say on Soul Train. He would say, it's been a dynamite gas. You say that. Absolute gas. Well, it has been that for me too. I've loved it. Reinforcing it on my own mind, the kind of person I want to be when I grow up. Someone asked me this morning, how much longer do you really think you're going to teach Taekwondo? I said, you know what? I've got another 20 years of high-level Taekwondo performance in me. 20 years at the highest level, where I'm at right now. I mean, doing things at a very high level. I got another 20 years of that. After that, I will continue teaching and continue performing, but I want to tone it down just a bit. So I've got another 20 years of high-level performance. I love it. So anyway, it's been a gas. It's been a stone gas, as my man would say. I told you it was an exciting show. As I said, tell your friends. If you've got questions for me, if you're living in some far-reaching part of the world, or you're right here in Phoenix, Arizona, or in the United States, send me an email at 7, SEVEN, @macnewton.com. Let me hear what you think about the show. Ask me a question. If it's compelling enough, I'll share it on the show. But if you send me an email, you have my word, I'll respond. And I'll continue to, unless it reaches a point where we can't handle them all. And then we'll get someone else to help me. As always, I want to remind you guys as we close our show to be true to yourselves, to be good to yourselves. But being true to yourselves means simply one thing, that your words and your behaviors match. That the things you say and the things you do are congruent. I always want to give my thanks to Bob Adlock. He's now the producer of the Phoenix Suns broadcast. He was my producer on our first TV show, the Mac Newton Power Hour on Cox 9 TV right here in Phoenix. Pat McMahon, my mentor for life. JC, John Cannon, the Loose Cannon up in San Francisco, who was my co-host on that show and will be my co-host for life. You the man. And of course, speaking of the man, JB, always in my heart. And of course, Zach, and of without question, the fabulous Natasha. Hey gang, you guys tune in again next week with and check out more of the Power Hour. And as I said, in the meantime, be true to yourselves. 3, 2, 1, peace. The Mac Daddy is out.